I know, funny, huh?
Oh, no.
It's Iris.
Oh, thank you, dearie.
Miracles happen. Dreams do come true. It's Iris Jackson.
And
the fabulous Iris Jackson.
And Terry Cole Whitaker. And I'm sorry. I got into the space of already doing the show with you, and then it was, like, hard to back up. We had about a minute and a half before, you know, so we were connected before it was time to start.
And we can talk fast, so we got a lot in a minute.
Yeah, and and I have to tell you, I said this last week, I will say it again, there are a few people on my list that are so inspiring, so uplifting. When I think of them, I think of the sun.
Wow.
I always think of the sun when I think of you.
Wow.
And they're so industrious, so filled with constructive activity, so truthful, so loyal, so devoted to the cause and the team, that I not only admire and am inspired by them, I also marvel at them. And you are on my marvelous list.
Oh, well, you're on my marvelous list, Iris Jackson. There's only one of you, and you're so precious and wonderful, and I love the work that you're doing and who you are and your courage to speak out and tell your truth. That's, you really are, and I admire that so much.
Terry, that, do you know what that means coming from you?
Oh, well, it's true, Iris. I was thinking about that last week to tell you, because you really, you're more courageous than I am. You think I'm courageous, but I really think you're courageous.
Well, you know, Kelly, I think we share a quality in common, which is balls to the walls, WFO, heaven bent for the ascension, and by God, everybody's going with us.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? I know, because, you know, it's true. Working for the welfare of others. And most people, a lot of people don't understand that, because, you know, it's like this thing where, I mean, even when I was growing up, you know, things were different, where the neighbors helped each other more. We knew each other. We would take, you have gardens and, you know, bring vegetables over to each other and do all that. And it does happen in a lot of places, but I know, like in cities and other places, it's like in Beverly Hills. Nobody goes out on their, sits out on their lawn in lawn chairs. I mean, you know, you drive by these houses in Beverly Hills, they're gorgeous, but nobody's out hanging out with the neighbors and watching the cars go by and all that kind of
stuff.
They're
hiding from the paparazzi.
They're hiding. No, but they got to run in the house and close the door and hide and lock everything down. And yeah, and it's like, you know, we're people. And one of the problems is, like, science has categorized human beings as animal bodies, and that's not true. We have human bodies. And it's like all animals are souls, all insects have souls. You know, it's just that living entities have bodies for a particular purpose, particular function, as they're learning and they're experiencing life. But we're all living entities. And so, but when they categorize people as animals, that's denying their human capacity. And what we're really trying to do is become human beings. And human beings are actually God conscious. They're spiritual beings, that we acknowledge who we really are. We're not just bodies, but we're messengers of God. We're, what would you call it? We're instruments of God. We're God's children working for the welfare of other people and of animals and the planet. And when we do that, we're in alignment with the divine, and everything good happens to us.
Well, you know, Terry, anything else is boring.
Yeah, it is. Chewing the chew. It's doing it. Oh, it's like chewing gum that's lost its flavor, but people don't know what else to do, so they keep chewing the same gum.
Has the chewing gum lost its flavor on the bedpost overnight?
Yeah, that's it.
And it had, Joey. It is boring. It is, I think people are tired of being limited. And I think people are tired of being pushed around and told what to do by the government and the media and a whole bunch of others. And I want to go back to the thing you said about people helping other people.
Yeah.
You know, Terry, I see that for myself. You know, I so much bought the picture of how I was supposed to be successful, that whenever I didn't feel that successfulness, I wanted to hide. I didn't want to tell people how bad I was doing. I wanted to tell them later when I conquered it,
when you were world famous and wealthy sitting on the top of the mountain in your mansion with everything. Then tell them. Well, you already are.
It's not that. It's not that as much as I didn't want to discourage with people with some of the stuff I've gone through. I only wanted wherever I've been to uplift. And so a lot of times I have just done it myself. And also when I thought some other people's consciousness wouldn't be helpful.
No, that's
like,
true, too.
What?
That's
like,
true.
like when my precious husband had cancer, we didn't tell anybody.
I know. I remember I didn't hear from you for a long time. I knew something was wrong.
But I didn't think, I mean, no matter how evolved anybody is, there's a certain part of our consciousness that goes, cancer, that's it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just didn't want to add that to it.
Right. No, because people's thoughts can make it worse. It's like, it is very true. At one level, we shouldn't tell everybody what's going on because this too shall pass. And then many people just hold on to it even when it's not there, or if their doubt can influence us in some way, instead of helping us to keep that positive, loving, divine consciousness. So we have to be discriminate in who we do tell. Would you say?
Well, yes, and also, Terry, I feel like the work is, you know, in working for the upliftment of people, I think everybody wants to make a contribution to that. Everybody.
Right. Right. It really true. Everybody, if you think of every little child, and this is like Jesus said, you have to become as little children, and oftentimes that means back to where before we were heavily programmed in this life, because every child is hardwired for God, and they're sweet, and they're giving, and they're loving and helpful, and they want to clean the house. But then the adults say, no, you're too little. Sit over there. You can't do anything. Go play with your toys. So then when they get big, they wonder why they don't clean the house, because they were told they couldn't when they were little. And it's like every child is optimistic and they think of they think of heavenly things and sweet things, and they're innocent until they're taught to be greedy and miserly and mean and payback and all that. And so then the child wants to please their parents or wants to please the teachers. Remember when I was in school in second grade, I moved a few times when in kindergarten, first grade, and it was around second. And I was in this, the teacher made me put on boxing gloves. Because this other little girl and I were having like a little argument, and she put boxing gloves on the other little girl, wanted us to fight. I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do that. It was like so awful standing there with boxing gloves on your hands. The teacher's going to have us beat each other up. It was awful.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What was the reason?
I don't know. It wasn't even a big deal or something. It was some little argument or something. And she said, oh, well, we'll just have it out right here. Put boxing gloves on us. And it was like, maybe that was a good thing she did that, because, I mean, I just ran the other direction. I mean, I'm standing there, but I didn't want to do that. Because it's not really our nature in that sense, that we're godlike. We're made in the image and likeness of God. And therefore, we're gods, but we're not the big deal God. We're little gods. You know, we're not the supreme, absolute, topmost supreme being, there's only one. But we're part of that, so we're itsy bitsy teensy weensy little gods with
I
divine
power.
We're
going to say yellow polka dot
bikini. See how programmed?
I put it past you.
We're programmed with music and everything.
I know. Well, you know, going back to the fight thing.
Yeah.
I feel from dealing with adults when I was a child mm-hmm. that people did things like that. I could just feel the way you felt when she put on the boxing gloves and said, have it out. And you know what my thought was? She got to hit both of you without getting put in jail.
Oh,
and,
that's interesting.
And also, though, some people are just so angry about all those things that were done to them as a child, and they're never going to be like those people, and they don't realize they just play out the same thing in teaching and parenting roles that they saw.
Yeah.
That they hated.
Yeah. Well, what happens is, too, a lot of people, like, well, what we tend to do is with our children, we try and get them to become like us or and do the things we did and go to the school we did and get the kind of job we did and live the kind of society we did, even though we're miserable. But we're going to have them try and see if they can get it to work. But it doesn't. And so what was it? Ralph Waldo Emerson, the great American philosopher transcendentalist, said, most people live lives of quiet desperation. And that is in the sadness of, but a lot of times people don't even take the time to be with themselves. They have that, you know, television on all the time, and they've got this, they've got that, so they never spend that time with themselves. But there's always that worm of anxiety in their stomach and the fear of what's going to happen next, and really the disappointment of all their broken dreams, because they're following, in a sense, a false god. They don't have the real information of what to do to have a good life. They just learned it from people who didn't have a good life, who are miserable, but they're going to copy those people. That's why I remember when I was a little kid, I watched the adults and I thought, what am I going to do? I want to have a good life. I don't want to live lives like these people.
I think you had the advantage that I did. See, I think that a lot of children buy the whole package, everything their parents say, and their parents are God, and their parents know, and we don't know. And to me, everyone in my family was so dysfunctional and so crazy and so miserable, Les Miserables, that I knew somebody had to take charge and do something to change this, and it wasn't going to be any of them.
Right.
And I think you had the same experience,
yes,
Carrie.
But see, this is good. This is good. It allowed us, but a lot of people don't question, and they don't question authority. And then we make that
start
wrong.
Now. It's never too late.
Yeah, you've got to start because you have an eternal life. You know, a lot of times people think as they get older, well, I hope one of these days I'll die and it'll all be over. It'll be finished. Sorry, it's never over. You can't die. And what you're going to get in your next life is where you leave this one off, because it's all consciousness. And you get the body that suits your consciousness. And you always have a body, a form, but what we can either have is our spiritual body, but that is a spiritual form. It's beautiful and wonderful, and it actually, we have it now because we're souls. We have that, we're spiritual beings, so we have a spiritual body and a spiritual mind and intelligence, but it's been dormant. It's been asleep. And so therefore we're like robots. We're just programmed, and we're just going on the program, and very few people question it, and then they just chew the chew. They keep chewing the gum that their parents chose and the rest of the world is chewing, and then everybody together is now saying, well, ain't it awful? We're going to have to just endure more suffering, and the times are getting worse, and hunker down now. It's going to be really bad for all of us. And so everybody.
And maybe Jesus will come.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And how are they going to recognize Jesus? People will recognize him. Yeah, how? Sandals, and if he, you know, I wonder if somebody shows up and says, I'm Jesus. People will go, yeah, they'll put him in a mental institute.
How are they going to know?
And then, well, what will unprogram people is what we're interested in. How can people get unprogrammed to be their real, divine, true self that is one with God? And, you know, I don't think of us as the little gods. I think of us as the extension of God, the supreme being in the great central sun. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. And
well, we're like little beams of light that come off the sun.
Right.
We're not the totality, because it's like a drop of water in the ocean has the qualities. We have God qualities, but we don't have the quantity. Of the supreme.
Well, I think that the job is to say, look, do through me what is truly helpful.
Yes.
God, I give you complete possession of me.
Yeah.
These are your hands, these are your feet, these are your eyes. I want to see as you see. I want to love as you love. I want my hands to do what you would have them do. I surrender completely to your will and give you full possession of me. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah, of course, because then we're instruments. And I think that when you say, how can people not be programmed and conditioned, how can they really, is that they have to wake up in the sense of look around and observe what's going on, and then start to notice that why are some people happy and some miserable? Why are some prosperous and some poor? Why are some sick and some healthy? And, you know, and it's like, you know, they could be twins in the same family, but they don't have twin lives. They have different lives. So we have to start to notice what's really going on. And then I think what the person has to do, at least this is what I've done. I remember when I was 17 and I was getting ready to graduate from high school and go to college, and I was terrified. I didn't know, and I was trying to find God too, because my parents didn't go to church or anything, but it was great because we could, you know, find our own. But I would go to all these Standard Brand churches trying to find God, and there's nothing wrong with Standard Brand, but I was bored. I didn't understand. I didn't resonate. So after I did the Lord's Prayer, I said to God about 2 or 3 weeks before I graduated from high school, God, please, I'm trying to find you. Please find me. I want to know you. And is that sincere asking, because that divine presence is with each and every one of us. In ancient teachings, it says it's like God and us are like two birds on a branch. And God's watching us, waiting for us to turn around, is always ready to give to us and to love us, because God loves us all the time, never forgets us. But we're the bird on the branch looking in the world. We're looking out there in the energy of the world instead of looking to God. And like Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all else shall be added. So most of us were looking for the all else. Let me get the stuff out here so I'm happy. But if we start to, you know, to me, everything starts with sincere prayer. And it works for me, because when you ask, you will receive. And I think that's what's up to each individual, because I don't know what's right for each person to do, but that's between them and their God. And if they start working with their partner, and when you're part of something, partner. So if you're part of something, you're a partner with that. So we're actually partners with God. And all of us are partners with God. And so that is the reservoir. God's the reservoir of bliss, the reservoir of all wealth, the reservoir of all joy and opulence and vitality and eternal life. So whatever you want, you have to go to where that exists. If I'm looking out in the world to get my happiness, the outer world is a reflection of the inner. So I'm looking in the wrong place, because I'm looking at the effect to give me the effect of the pleasure, the joy, the prosperity. So an intelligent person will start seeking to get what they want from someone who has it. So just like us, we can only give to others what we have. But here we have the definition of God. God has everything and is that other bird on the branch just waiting for us to repent, Repent means make a 180-degree turnaround. That's all it means. It means turn to God, and then the outer world, once we harmonize ourselves with that love and truth and prosperity, the outer world will also start reflecting that new consciousness.
Well, let me just say something for mm-hmm. me about, you know, I've watched your program since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to live a Neiman Marcus life, and I came from a Montgomery Ward, you know, middle, you know, how they had the three different grades of things,
mm-hmm.
sort of the medium grade, you know, mm-hmm. of the Montgomery Ward's catalog.
And, yeah.
And
we used to play dibs in the catalog. Did you do that?
We used to play, I'm on this side, you're on that side, I get everything on this page, you get everything on that page, and we'd go through the whole catalog.
And then we would fight about it, even though it's not even ours, but in the catalog, who got it?
We would laugh when we got the stuff we didn't want, like the jock straps, the size Z, double Z bras, you know. We would laugh, and we'd do every page.
That's funny.
Oh, man. I'll trade you the jock straps for the... I mean, it was so fun.
That's a fun game.
Yeah, it was. But uh-huh. I didn't really want anything from that catalog.
No, there wasn't anything. Uh-huh.
And so in the 80s, I was teaching total prosperity like you were on TV. I wanted to be on the radio. And what I noticed was two things came up. One, I did have it. I lived in a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful house with my twin flame and drove a 928 Porsche and had all the accoutrements of total wealth and prosperity,
mm-hmm.
and always afraid of losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this one television show where you said, "Don't make your life about polishing your stuff."
Mm-hmm.
And but I think that people, we went through a thing of being real conservative, and you do until you get the Christ consciousness and know
right.
you can manifest one seamless garment as you need it, one meal as you need it.
Right.
You don't have to carry around a bunch of stuff and polish it. I think we're, but at the same time, you know, I'm reading this book about the ascension process and it talks about, you know, like giving up. And I live in a beautiful mansion and I have a beautiful pool and I have a beautiful garden I've worked on for 22 years. And I
giving up doesn't mean you let it. Giving up means you're just not attached, because it's not whether you have it or not, but because see, suffering comes from our attachment to things. The more we think we can't live without something, the more afraid we are of losing it. But it's like even in the great teachings, it doesn't say that you only, there was that one man that came to Jesus, and he had done everything, and then the last thing Jesus just told him, well, if you want to come with me, you, and he was a very wealthy man, you got to give everything you got away and then follow me. Well, the guy couldn't do that, but that was that guy's case. That's not everybody is in that same situation, but what it means is that you use what you have for spiritual purposes. So that you use your beautiful home and your beautiful car and your beautiful everything in your service, in your work. But you're not attached to it. It's not your identity. It's you have your true identity in whatever God gives you, because God's given you that. It's there for you to use that. But you don't have to give it away. It's just don't be attached to it. That's all. You could, and have everything that you need.
Well, I guess, I think I need more than most people are even willing to ask for. I need to be surrounded by flowers all the time.
Well, yeah. Who doesn't?
Well, duh.
Yeah. I know. I love it. I went early morning to the garden place today, and it was so nice to go over there and get more flowers and, you know, plant. I'm going to plant this afternoon.
But it's all for God. I offer all of my plants on my altar to God.
Okay, well that gets to point B, which I think the thing that people have come up and I've had come up is I don't want to use this for selfish purposes.
That's it,
Terry.
You know what that means? Is Jesus taught about the flesh, and see, a lot of people don't understand. Selfish means that I use this for me without including God. And there's a lot of, see, everybody's got a relationship with God. That's all life is. Everybody's life is about their relationship with God. That's all it is. Now, what happens is some people are atheists, and their relationship with God is, you don't exist. Okay, so God says, fine. God exists, but obviously, the way that person wants it is, they want God dead, that God doesn't exist. So that's their relationship. So what they have to do is they have to suffer a life that is depressing in a lot of ways, and they think when they die they'll just be dead and that's it and blah 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 blah. They don't know the laws of karma or anything like that. Other people, their relationship with God is, God's their lover. You know, God gives you orgasms automatically if you want one, if you just meditate. I'm telling you, don't even ask for it. Then you have to tell God, I'm busy, I've got a headache. But if you want God to be your lover, God's your lover. If you want God to be your father or your mother, that's who they are. Because God's all things to everybody. But everybody's life is all about God. Oh yeah, God exists, but I ignore God. I've got my own thing going on. But that's their relationship with God. So, but God reciprocates to us in the way, because it's our free will. So it's how we do it. So when you include God, that means when your garden is beautiful and it reminds you of God, and you invite people to your home to meditate and to pray and to enjoy the garden, then you've got a temple. You've got a goddess temple there. And so then you're including God. So the selfishness is, I'm just doing this for my sense pleasure. For my eyes, for my nose, for my mouth, for my ear, for my skin and my genitals. That's what my life is about. But we have a spiritual body. And that's really what the ascension is about in my studies, is that the ascension is the full awakening of the spiritual body. And at that time, either that body becomes so predominant, the other one just is like disappears, but you don't
dissolve into light.
Well, more than light, because the body's not, this physical body is already a light body because it's made of material energy. But there's a spiritual body that is not made of light. It is actually our real person. So there is the effulgence, which is the light, which is the effulgence off the body of God from the center of the spiritual world. So we don't want to become light. I've been there before, and I've hung out in one of my lifetimes. It's very boring because it's a static, and it's just a kind of like a humming thing, and you're just being. But there's no relationship. There's no nothing going on. It's just being without aliveness or activities or emotion or feeling or any of that. So. There's three different kinds of aspects of God. There's Brahman, which is the light. There's Paramatma, which is God within. And then there's Bhagavan, who's the beloved. So people can choose any relationship they want. But what happens is when we don't want our life to be selfish, just about ourselves, because that's a miserable life. The root word of miserable is miser. And that means a non-giving life. So you can live in a palace. You can be driving a Rolls Royce if you want. You can have wherever you want to live and what you want to do, you can do it. But what you want to do is dovetail those desires with your relationship with God, so that at least you put God in the circle as you choose to know God and to love God. And then what happens is things come to you. It's just like, a couple of days ago, I thought, well, I want to redo my office and my temple area of my house, and it just got done yesterday. You know what happens? You desire it, and then it just starts happening. It just starts going, and then all of a sudden, it's done.
No struggle.
Wow.
And it's fun. See, that's the fun part. There's no sadness in it. Sadness comes when we live without God. We choose to ignore God or pretend God doesn't exist, or we think we're on our own and we have no help. So we're just, that's what people are desperate. They think they're alone and it's a struggle and they're believing all the fear mongers of the world and they're miserable before anything's ever even happened.
What can we do to assist the people that are there? Because I tell you, Terry, there was this man at the nursery the other day, and I used to take flowers all the time everywhere I went, and I gave this man flowers because he served me, and I just wanted to give flowers to somebody that loves flowers, that mm-hmm. was attuned to them, you know, so he sends me a Christmas card every year, and I was in there the other day, and I avoid him. There's just something about his energy that I avoid.
Well, he thinks you might like him or something.
He followed me around at the nursery, and he said three things to me that I just about jumped out of my skin. One was, he was talking about he was planting his garden. I said, well, you plant organic, don't you? He said, there's absolutely no difference between organic and conventional. And he said, I was in a class with a professor who...
Oh, yeah, right.
And I just
paid
was...
paid by the pharmaceuticals and the Monsanto, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to get away from him. So I continued my shopping. He followed me around. He said... You know, I used to watch your TV show, but, I liked your ideas and everything, but he said he was an atheist. I don't want to say I am with that.
No.
And he said, can we still be friends?
No.
I said, yes, Terry.
Oh, no, I know. It's true. You're there to help him, but not to let him drag you down.
And then he followed me around a third time, and he said... when I win the lotto, I'm going to do this. I forgot what it was because I was just walking backwards the other way,
hiding behind the petunias.
Yes. Not you. You would have just wasted them, Terry.
Oh, yeah. Flat down.
No, we can't be friends. And put your dick on the counter. I'm getting the ping pong paddle.
Yeah. So what happened? What was the last thing?
Third one was, he said, when I win the lotto, and I don't even remember what he said he was going to do, because I was out of there, you know, I'm paying my money, I'm getting the hell out. And he said, I'm going to win the lotto. And he said, I don't play the lotto, but when I do, the one time, I'm going to win. And I was just like, okay, see ya.
See, good for you. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, the other day... This,
what do you do?
Well, the same thing happened to me the other day. This friend of mine who... Not a friend, really, but we were in college together, and we both played the leads in the college musical. So, you know, but he had this big crush on me. But I always liked him as a friend, but he wasn't my style or type. And so, every once in a while he'll contact me, and he lives not too far from me, and I don't want to be around him because he's an atheist, and he's all into the body. He's over 70, but his whole thing is, my body's stronger than ever. He looks like he's near death when I look at him, but he thinks he's so handsome, and he thinks he's stronger than he's ever been, because, you know, we're all going to lose that body, which is material, but never our spiritual body. And that's what ascension is, the activation of our true divine body. And that is immortal and eternal, and it's beautiful. I've actually seen it one time many years ago. It was
me too.
Awesome. It's golden. Was yours golden?
it wasn't golden so much as it was self-luminous.
It was luminous. Mm-hmm.
It was definitely me, and it was me without a flaw of any kind.
Exactly. No wrinkles, no flaws.
And it was an emanation of such love and sweetness and light and glory, really, that I just started focusing with on all my might. That's what I want to be. But I also think that as we focus on that with one pointedness, this body can transform into that.
Well, this body can't transform into that. Why is we have to give up the idea of this body. We have to give up the idea of material body. And what happens is I've been studying a lot about this, is that our true self is we have a spiritual body that's identical with us. There's no difference. Just like in this body, there's a difference between us. And this body has blood and bones and all of that. Spiritual body doesn't have any of that. But it's eternal. It's self-effulgent. And it's absolutely incredibly beautiful beyond anything that we could ever imagine in this world, and it never dies.
Well, the blood is gold.
Yeah, it's not this kind of blood. It's different. Yeah, you could call, okay. So the idea is the more we act from our true self, our divine self, and this is what Jesus was talking about, you know, about no death. He kept talking about there's no death, and gave us this system. And that's kind of what I followed, is to also find out where he got that information. So I'm a root person. I want to know where did they get that, and where did they get that, and where did they get that. So that takes me on these journeys to find out the sources of this information, because this is what life is about. This is what we're supposed to be doing. So we find out about how that's what we're supposed to do. How can I attain the topmost that's possible?
Yes, and you are always in the business of doing that, and you're always in the business of supporting everyone else in going along with that and not being programmed to be less than their God self. And I just thank God for that, Terry.
Oh, well, you're so sweet. But this guy, okay, so he wanted to meet me for lunch at this vegetarian restaurant. And I said, okay, I'll give it a try, see if I can see why he's an atheist. And so we had this little lunch and everything, and we talked a few little things, and I realized he's not really interested in knowing about God. So why should I waste my time trying to work with somebody who really doesn't want to know who he really is? He thinks he's his body. So it's not like I'm discarding the person, but if he's really interested, he can come to my website, he can read my books, he's like, you know, he can listen to your radio program. We're there, but we have to put our energy where it's going to do the greatest amount of good for the greatest amount of people. And when somebody is interested, like I have people in my master program, they can call me at any time. And I work with them on the phone. And when they become part of the masters, you know, and then they can email me. And, you know, I've got people all over the world, and they'll call me. And I love working with them because they use it. They do something with it.
They do something that's for the upliftment of all life.
Yes.
Well, you know what, Terry? And everything else is boring.
It is boring. Because it's the same old, same old. Now, we may appear the same to other people because we go to the market, we get in our car, we clean our house, or, you know, or maybe whatever it is, work in the garden, we do these things, we have our family. But it's who we are inside that's different. So it's hard for people to know who's an enlightened person. But, you know, great enlightened people are very friendly, they're very loving, they're very generous, but they have a secret world. They have a secret life. And that is the life of the inner life. And that is the greatest life, because that's the life of the soul. And when the people don't know who they are, they just live this boring life. that's on the outside. And they go to work planning their escape because they hate their job. They look in their checkbook and they can't afford it. So what they are is they act, work like beasts of burden and struggling to pay for that big TV set so they can watch the football game, and they're struggling to keep the house and the mortgage and struggling to get their sex life, and they're struggling to get this and that. And that's not what our lives are about. All of this comes to us easily when we know who we are and the principles of life.
Well, you're a great place to learn them. Tell people how they can reach you.
Oh, well, I'd love to have people come to my website, and I've got this little book that I wrote called Three Keys to Fortune. It's just really, it's about 12, 13 pages, and it's just excellent. And there's some workbook things you do in there to help you attain what you want. And you come to my website when you put in your email address, and I don't bother you with sending you a whole bunch of announcements. I'll probably send something out maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months or whatever, just to let you know what I'm doing. And that's www.terrycolewhitaker.com. TerryColeWhitaker.com, TerryColeWhitaker.com, and the www. But it's really, it's like you, Iris, and myself and others. It's like Tony Robbins would come to my church. Mark Victor Hansen wrote Chicken Soup of the Soul, came to all my services and seminars and read my books. And Neil Donald Walsh, in fact, I'll be speaking this weekend at the New Living Expo that's at the Concourse in San Francisco. I'll be speaking Friday night at a free talk. I think it's 6 or 7 p.m. And then on Saturday night at 7. And on Saturday, I'm moderating a panel with Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote Conversations with God, one of my old students. I haven't seen him in years. And then Ryan Eisler, who wrote The Blade, The Chalice and the Blade. That was a good book.
Uh-huh.
And then this other lady who it does kind of Native American things. I never heard of her before, but she's going to be on this. So that's a place. But like I was saying, like you and these other people who are people who we seek. We go out and we don't just sit around and say, ain't it awful? We go, well, what can I do to get what I want? You know, what can I do to be happy? What is the secret? So we have to actually be willing to go out and learn and find out. And that means to go beyond our preconceived notions and everything maybe we've learned up to this date. And I often say to people, wonder if everything you've learned, almost everything, is not true.
Well, you know, I think for a lot of people that's a lot to give up, Terry.
Well, they don't have to give it up all at once, because that's the thing. We think we are identity. And this one friend of mine had this dream that woke him up, and it was so scary because chunks of himself were being taken away, but it was chunks of identity with this, and he thought his job, and he thought was his relationships, and he tried to go get them back because he thought that's who he was. But we're not any of the stuff we think we are, and that's that keeps us miserable, is our misidentification with all the stuff that we're not. And it's like I was listening to one of my teachers, and because I listen to CDs all the time of the great teachers that I work with, and it was talking about how the great mystics were all magnificent poets, and they are, because as I read their works, it's the most beautiful writings and most romantic and erotic even, and passionate and beautiful just the way the words are. And it's saying that as we become more enlightened, that means more awake to who we are, we have all capabilities already. We have all talents. We have everything, but it's dormant. And so as we open to the great truth of our own reality, of who we really are and what we are, then we're geniuses in everything. We can sing, we can dance, we can do art. I did an oil painting one time, sold it for $2,000. I just wanted to prove you don't have to be a starving artist. I never did another one. That was just one.
And you wanted to prove you didn't have to go to Italy and study with the master to paint, too.
Exactly. I could just do it. And there was this book I read many years ago, Walter Russell. Did you ever read his? The Man Who Tapped the Secrets of the Universe?
No, but thank you, Walter Russell. How do we get this?
I have no idea, because I bought it years ago. But Walter Russell, The Man Who Tapped the Secrets of the Universe. It's a little booklet, and it's just how he could do everything, and because he'd just go do it. And what happens is we want to think that these extraordinary people are unusual, but they're ordinary people who dare to do extraordinary things. And that every person, and so what we see throughout the world are all these different levels of intelligence having to do with that person's awareness of who they are and what's possible. So there was, like yesterday, I went to a little party at a friend's house, and only me and one other person showed up, but I'm glad I went. And her son, Charlie, has been accepted to Vassar, and he's a lovely person. And she took him to her writing class, and it's full of all these professional writers. Well, what Charlie's writing, and he's just graduating from high school, they're all drooling over that, because he has this gift, but he can do ice skating fabulously. He's a very loving person, because these talents, and oftentimes it takes lifetime after lifetime to develop these talents, because it takes us, if we're on the slow boat to China, can take us millions of lifetimes to develop, or you can awake right now and have them all.
That is the fun way. That's the exciting way.
That's shushing the mountain.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people's resistance to that is, wait a minute, nobody else can do it. I did it the hard way, and so.
Oh, yeah, because they wanted to, they struggled.
Yeah.
I have this one person, I'm not going to let him come over to my house anymore and visit, because all he does is whine and complain, and he's got this project, and da-da-da-da-da. But you can't give him any advice, can't help, because he's patting himself on the back about his struggle. So go ahead, buddy, and struggle, but I don't have to listen to
you. You are so holy and pure.
Oh, yeah, I did it all myself. Well, good for you.
And it took 2,000 lifetimes, and by God, you should do it that way,
way
too.
Way, too. And so I just told him, I said, you know, I think you need to pay a therapist, because you're not paying me, and I don't want to hear it anymore.
You know what I've said to people when they were doing stuff
really?
Like that?
Uh-huh, what?
That is really great, Terry, but I've gone a step farther and said, you know, I would rather let somebody shit in my ears than listen to this crap, and hung up on them.
Oh, that's good.
Oh. Yeah.
But well, anybody listening, Iris is so pretty and sweet. You'd never ever think she'd be, because even when she says those kind of words, the other person thinks that they got the best compliment they could ever, because she's such an angel. It's so true.
Well, they do get that I love them, and I'm not going to listen to them whine
anymore. Yeah, because that doesn't help them when you just listen to them whine, and then you're depressed, and then there's nothing you can do about it, because they really like their struggle story. That's their identity.
Well, you know, I learned this from a friend of mine who's so tough, and she's so great, and I used to whine about money and create these terrible dramas about money, and I'd have to have a certain amount of money, and you know, by a certain time, and I was just like Scarlett, you know, I could just
right.
make it so serious and so important, and I called her up, and I was saying, and this was like 80s or something, and I called her up and I said, I have to have $500 by this afternoon. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have it, blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, I don't know what you're going to do either, but if you're going to whine, go sit in the closet. I'm hanging up now.
You sit in the closet.
And you know what?
True.
You know what? I had that $500 in 5 minutes in the most easy, magical, miraculous way, and
wow.
I feel like I learned from her not to let people whine.
It's not good for them. But you know, some people are very committed to whining. I know this friend of mine. I've tried every which way I can to help him. I even put some money in his project to help him and do all this. He likes to whine. He likes to complain and how he's not appreciated and nobody respects him and blah, and how hard he works and nobody helps him. You know, and so it's like, after a while you realize you can't change people. If people want to change, they do it themselves.
Well, that's why I backtrack from people that say they're an atheist, because I don't want to hear it. It's not my department. It's not my department. You know, get somebody that you pay $500 an hour for, and secretly they go out to lunch while you're laying on the couch whining.
That's it.
Because they're the only ones that are going to listen.
You have to pay somebody then. But I remember one time I was counseling. This is when I had my church, and this man came in for counseling. He was a sweet man. While he's talking to me, I fell asleep. And he said, "Reverend Terry." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Was I that boring?" And I said, "Yeah, you were." It changed his life. He started to get a life because he realized he even bored the counselor. His life was so boring.
That is so wonderful, Terry.
But I didn't mean to, but it was. I just had lunch, too, and it was in the afternoon. But still, it was so uninteresting. But it changed his life.
Oh, Terry, I love you.
poor guy. Remember one time this guy came in for counseling? And he said, "I've been everywhere. I've been here and there. Nobody can help me." He goes on and on, and nobody can help me. And then, so he's like challenging me, thinking I'm going to say, "Well, I can help you." I said, "I can't help you either, so you'd better leave." And what he did, he was shocked. And he started coming to church, turned his whole life around. Because I couldn't do it. He had to do it. Before that, he was giving that to everybody else. And of course, nobody else could do it. It's what he had to do.
Oh, Terry.
Yeah.
That's very good.
So that's what we want everybody to know. It's all possible, but it's up to you to seek the answers and get the solutions, and they do exist. Life is not a mystery. All of the answers are there, and it's known, and whatever you want, you can attain. You can learn anything. You are a genius. You are a child of God, and you have all potency and power.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Well, Terry, I can't imagine anyone whining in front of you. it's like, you know, it'd be so embarrassing to be less than all of God intended me to be and know you.
Oh.
It's like, you know, I wouldn't stand in front of a person wouldn't stand in front of Stevie Wonder and tell him they couldn't do it.
Yeah, or stand in front of, what was his name, Louis Armstrong and say they couldn't sing. Well, neither could Louis Armstrong, but he had all kinds of hit records as a singer. See? Because he could do it. And they say the bumblebee can't fly because its body's too big for its wings, but it doesn't know it, and it goes and flies anyway.
And Louis Armstrong didn't know it, and he just gave his whole heart.
Yeah, he gave his whole heart.
And we love him today.
Yeah.
He's left a lasting impression.
Yes.
On our hearts.
Yes. Remember that I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I say to myself, what a wonderful world. You know,
oh,
I met this woman, Jill Kinmont, who was a skier getting ready for the Olympics many years ago, and she had an accident and her body then became quadriplegic. And I was this one day skiing up at Mammoth, and there she was, and I went up to her, and she had this big smile on her face sitting in her wheelchair and watching the skiers, and I said to her,
you know, you have such a positive attitude. I really admire you. She said, what choice do I have?
What would I rather do?
Exactly. So you can either be miserable and complain and then create more problems for yourself, or you can find out what life is really about and how to attain your heart's desires. It's all possible.
Yeah, you know, I want to mention that video you sent me from YouTube about Susan Boyle.
Uh-huh.
And I really recommend people watch the whole thing. She'd always wanted to be a professional singer like Elaine Page, who I don't even know who is.
I don't either.
But she's 47 years old, and she goes before Britain's Got Talent. And it's just so moving. I thought, all of the people that are 47 years old that thought their dream couldn't come true now feel that they have a chance, Terry.
I know.
And she gave that.
She did. No, it's funny. They have some young boy sang this last week. Everybody said, oh, he's terrific. But nobody's like her. Because it's what she's like an angel. I really feel she's an angel.
Yeah.
Came to inspire us. It doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter your age, doesn't matter whether other people snicker and laugh at you, because who are they? What they think of you is none of your business.
Which is the title of one of Terry's best-selling books. We've got to go, Terry.
Okay.
I recommend people get Terry's tapes and books and participate with her in however your heart's guided. And I ask you to come back soon, Terry.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to. I love being with you. You know that, Iris.
I love it, too. And I thank everyone for listening. God bless you. And may all your dreams come true and be 1,000 times
better,
more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible.
Yes.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you. And this is my wish for you. That all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Ah, men, ah, women, ah, children, and yeehaw!